Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Sunday through Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Who's Reading the Organon, a show co-hosted by Vera Resnick and Debbie Bruck. We're challenging you to join us on our journey to complete Samuel Hahnemann's Organon in 1 year. Let's go.
Hi, I'm Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community, talking with classical homeopath Vera Resnick. Today is August 3rd, 2010, and you're listening to show number 63 of Who's Reading the Organon. We will be going over aphorism number 31. And I will begin with some inspirational quotes, or just quotes, however you want to take it. And we're going to be thinking of Vera hammering away at us during this because there's construction going on and a lot of noise. And when I just put on my headset to kind of keep it a little quiet, it's not connecting. So the stars are in the way that we're just going to use all of these little knocking sounds to assist us in remembering what it is we need to remember. So today I'm going to begin with a quote from David Gerald, who says, understanding the laws of nature does not mean that we are immune to their operations. And I believe he was an American science fiction author who started his career in 1966 and submitted an unsolicited story outline for the television series of Star Trek. Another quote by David Orr is, when we heal the earth, we heal ourselves. And that is a big concept to think of, you know, kind of like the chicken and the egg. What's first? What comes first? And do we heal ourselves and then the earth, or do we start with what's around us? I've got a nice quote from Miracle Goddess on Twitter, who quotes Mark Twain, kindness is the language which the deaf can hear and the blind can see. It sounds really beautiful. Let me see if Vera is with us. Yes, Vera, hello.
Hi, Debbie. We made it this evening.
I'm glad you could hear me because my headset is not working at all. I plugged it in and no connection. It's brand new and it's not working. So
okay, I hear you.
You hear me okay, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, good. I wanted to go ahead and finish up the inspirations for today that'll motivate us and get us started. And this is one more by Twitter coming through from Quotes to Smile, who is quoting a Chinese proverb, tell me and I'll forget. Show me and I may remember. Involve me and I'll understand. And one of the things that you often do on the show is say, here's an exercise. And I don't know how many people actually take you up on questions. I know it's extra work for all of us, but it's also another way to help us to get involved, understand, and remember. Now, on the network, there are a couple of lively discussions going on. And one is by Dr. Khan, who had posted earlier on a story about Carbavet and how it's a life-saving drug. And in the news recently, there's been stories about preemie babies who are in quite a bit of respiratory alert. So I thought, well, might Carboveg come in handy at that juncture? And I was hoping that some people might put up some stories. Also, Dr. Valerian Mendonca or Mendonca, however he pronounces his name, he'll correct me, has posted two great blogs. One, everyone has tried to post it again, is the news that the High Court has asserted homeopaths, Ayurvedic doctors, and other alternative physicians can do surgery. And there's more explanation on the blog. I've put up a banner for that. The other one he wrote was about bee venom being implanted on a plastic nanoparticle that contains only the imprint of the bee's toxin and yet shows effect on mice. And I thought that was quite interesting. And we're going to be talking about aphorism number 31 today and wondering where this is going to take us and what journey we will be on today. So I'm ready to go with you. Aphorism number 31.
Yeah, okay, I'll read. You hammer.
I will. Do you hear it hammering? I better put on that quiet zone.
No, okay, I just hear it from time to time.
Okay.
It adds punctuation to the show.
We need a little lively accent. Go ahead.
Right. Okay. The inimical forces, partly psychical, partly physical, to which our terrestrial experience existence is exposed, which are termed morbific noxious agents, do not possess the power of morbidly deranging the health of man unconditionally. But we are made ill by them only when our organism is sufficiently disposed and susceptible to the attack of the morbific cause that may be present, and to be altered in its health, deranged, and made to undergo abnormal sensations and functions. Hence, they do not produce disease in every one, nor at all times. One of the interesting exercises that I have mentioned, or you mentioned the exercises I give, sometimes it can be very valuable with each aphorism to look for the question that the aphorism answers. Why is this aphorism here? And it seems to me that Hahnemann writes this aphorism in answer to the question of, either the question of can inimical forces, can outside things derange the health of man unconditionally? Answer is no. Do you see what I mean? I think isn't there a game in America, Jeopardy, where you have to figure out the question?
Vera, you are reading my mind. I was just about to say that. It's an ongoing TV series. My grandmother used to watch it religiously, and my mother does still watch it. Unfortunately, I'm not bright enough to answer the questions. So I don't watch it.
I've never watched it. I've just heard about it.
Can you imagine if it's been on for so many? I'm going to have to check if it's been on for like 30 years or more.
If it was on in Hahnemann's time.
Oh yeah, he had TV. Maybe
200 years of Jeopardy.
He would probably love it. It's a fun game.
I have no idea. But the concept is important because as Hahnemann builds his argument, he builds the explanation of what or why step by step, then he's examining what would someone ask about what I've said so far. A question people could ask of what Hahnemann has said so far. So does this attack everyone unconditionally? Will people unconditionally get sick? And that's always the interesting thing when you see the kids in the kindergarten and everyone has a runny nose except one. And you wonder about that one. Let's look at the footnote on this. Just to complete.
Well, isn't that how they do genetic when they do genetic manipulation? They look at all of the plants or whatever it is, the organism, and find the ones that are most resistant. And then they take the genes from that one and plant it into make a hardier seed or something like that. So they're using that concept.
That's not quite the concept that's being related to here, but the concept relates to susceptibility. I wouldn't mix in genetics into this particular discussion, because susceptibility can mean a lot of different things and not some kind of predisposition.
Mm-hmm.
But
okay, I've taken a wrong turn.
I would say it's a confusing turn. It's like, as you say, I bring you back to the text. Let's stay with what Hahnemann is saying. It's like also one of the things that I keep finding. First of all, we should be able to read and understand and respond fluently and repeat easily what Hahnemann himself is saying. After that, to develop the ideas beyond that. So here the question is, will everybody get sick? And the answer is no. When there's an epidemic, not everyone gets sick. When there's colds going around, not everyone gets sick.
To make it a little bit more understandable, Hahnemann was very concerned with the vital force itself and not specifically genetics or cellular tissue function in that way, so that it's very changeable. You know, I consider the genetics is a very defined point, whereas the human vital force itself is dynamic. So depending on your emotional state of being, whether you will be susceptible to an illness, whether you have just had an accident, whether you have a cold or something else that predisposes you to something. So it's not something that is static, but something that is very dynamic. Is that more helpful?
I think that's more helpful, but I think also what may help is to look again that Hahnemann has said repeatedly, he talks about things that are perceptible to us. Now, personally, I have never seen a gene. I've seen pairs of genes, but I have never seen a gene. I wouldn't know how to do genetic testing. Genetic testing and genetic correction, none of this is within what is perceptible through signs and symptoms to me.
Okay.
So,
right.
So if we're talking susceptibility, the first places that I would look regarding susceptibility is the signs and symptoms, and perhaps there's the miasmatic susceptibility, which is possibly the closest we would get to genetics, but maybe not even that. I just wouldn't go there trying to focus on original sources. Like here we're focusing on Hahnemann's own words, what Hahnemann is talking about. Sometimes we confuse the issue when we bring in elements that he himself would call theoretical, not necessarily final, and not necessarily part of the how-to of the practical instructions. Even the theory he presents here, he says this is the most probable. He doesn't give it the force of this is a law. The law of similars is a law. The theory behind how maybe it works is a probable. Let's look at the footnotes
and see whether that adds. That is very, very helpful for us to state specifically in the aphorisms and differentiate which ones are law and which ones are theoretical probability, so that we can separate them out and know from where we're talking. That's very helpful for me. Okay.
I think it is an issue of separating things out rather than, like, when we confuse the issue, then we can say, well, Hahnemann was he viewed in advance a lot of the developments that are actually happening now, and he this or that or the other. But all that does not help us in the direct reading of the organon and the learning how to do homeopathy from the organon. That's my view. The theorizing does not help. The understanding what's law and how to practically apply that law, that helps me be a homeopath.
Well, I guess sometimes I just have a little bit more information than I need. Okay.
I'm not even sure if it's more whatever. It's a discussion in itself. I think it's perhaps more light than you need. Let's say you need to find your way through a crowded room. And what you need to find is the path through that room. It's full of objects and suitcases and whatever else it might be. Then you know there's like a thread through that room and you'll be able to find your way through it. But you're looking at the path and you turn on a very strong light and all you can see is all the clutter inside it. And you can't see your path clear. And I think that's what happens when we go too much into all kinds of theories and ideas, and it can be very interesting. Someone was talking to me today about the blood type diet. Can be very interesting. Is it applicable? Is it not? Some people say it's nonsense. Some people say it's very valid. But this isn't helping me do my job as a homeopath. It's like sometimes I need to shed the light on the path and not on absolutely everything around it. Anyway, footnote.
Okay.
When I call disease, when I call disease a derangement of man's state of health, I'm far from wishing thereby to give a hyperphysical explanation. Ah, I was looking for this. I am far from wishing thereby to give a hyperphysical explanation of the internal nature of diseases generally, or of any case of disease in particular. It is only intended by this expression to intimate what it can be proved diseases are not and cannot be, that they are not mechanical or chemical alterations of the material substance of the body, and not dependent on a material morbific substance, but they are merely spirit-like, conceptual, dynamic derangements of life. For Hahnemann, spirit-like is conceptual. Spirit-like means not mechanical, chemical alterations of material substance. And it's not hyperphysical. And this footnote is very important for those who get confused, thinking that we're talking about derangement of the soul. That's not what Hahnemann's referring to here. Spirit-like for Hahnemann is conceptual. It's not mechanical, not chemical.
How does he? How can a person be confused that it he would be talking about the soul? And when he says,
I hear it.
I hear it.
I hear it. Also, it's interesting. The word spirit. People often take any mention of the word spirit towards the direction of spirituality and soul. And it's curious to me that they rarely take the word spirit to the direction of alcohol. But there you are.
Mm-hmm. Well, it could be very soulful for some. he has in parentheses conceptual next to that word spirit-like, which indicates something other.
A concept rather than mechanical or chemical. That's what it seems to me.
Mm-hmm.
If anyone else has opinions and would like to mention them in the chat or in the group, I'm happy to hear. But it seems to me Hahnemann here is pointing out it's not hyperphysical. Now, I wonder if there are any other definitions
of hyperphysical.
Of hyperphysical.
That's a good question. Are you checking your...
I'm having a look as we speak.
Okay, in the Yaskor or elsewhere? Well,
I'm actually having a look to see
Hyperphysics is an educational resource about physical topics. So let's see. Not really giving too much information, but having to do with physics itself. And if we just break it down to what is something that is hyper, you think about a lot of activity, like a kid is hyperactive, or it's extremely.
Are you taking a definition from somewhere, or are you theorizing?
I'm looking it up, and the hyper is Well, you know, Hyper is a multi-platform Australian video game. That's not a whole thing.
I think you have to be careful. It's like splitting up Calc-Fos and saying it's Calc and it's Fos, whereas Calc-Fos has its own provings.
Yeah.
Hyperphysical, if you look at the reasoning given in the context, hyperphysical is supposed here, as far as I understand it, to mean non-physical, superphysical, if you like, above the physical. And above the physical, we have the spiritual.
Okay. That makes more sense.
I mean,
but,
that's been my understanding.
Hyper is another, a level above. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. That's been my understanding.
It makes good sense.
Maybe it's something we'll ask around about before the next show. See if we have more input. Shall we go on to 33?
Should we take any particular emphasis on the words that he keeps in capitalization? The fact that if he were speaking to us in a booming voice, or maybe in a soft voice, I've never really heard his voice, he would be speaking at a level volume. And then when he got to these capital letters, which I've emphasized before, we don't do in etiquette on the internet, unless we are emphasizing something. So he has that done here in aphorism number 31.
Mm-hmm. I think it's pretty clear.
Okay.
I'm just wondering if we have time to go on to 32.
Yes, we have plenty of time. 32. Would you like me to read through the hammering?
Yeah, if you're okay with that.
Sure. But it is quite otherwise with the artificial morbific agents, which we term medicines. Every real medicine, namely, acts at all times, under all circumstances, on every living human being, and produces in him its peculiar symptoms, distinctly perceptible if the dose be large enough, so that evidently every living human organism is liable to be affected and, as it were, inoculated with the medicinal disease at all times. And absolutely, in parentheses and in capital letters, unconditionally, which, as before said, is by no means the case with the natural diseases. Okay, so here he is like a counterpoint to what we just heard
mm-hmm.
in the previous aphorisms. That here we have, this is going to affect every human being, no matter what their particular sensibilities. So if you're being dosed with mercury in high enough doses, you will be affected. I wonder if he had those gurus that you read about in Carlos Castaneda, any of these gurus who can take any kind of toxin and live through it. But he's implying that a medicinal is going to affect every living human being unconditionally.
Mm-hmm. And he's showing it as opposed to the natural diseases. Natural diseases only affect those who are susceptible. And susceptibility is something that he hasn't gone into it yet, but he will. Whereas everyone is susceptible to medicines.
Mm-hmm. Everyone is. So,
what were you going to say?
Do we need to give any example? Or were you about to do that?
I wasn't thinking so much of examples, but what I was thinking is something that we need to bear in mind, that hammering away, if you'll forgive the expression, with a remedy can bring about an artificial disease because everyone is susceptible to a remedy. And if we hammer away too hard with a remedy, we can cause an artificial medicinal disease that is difficult to shift.
True.
I think that's that's part of the point here.
Okay, so is this, in a way, it's somewhat of a warning and somewhat of just a principle of understanding?
I think it's intended here as a principle of understanding, because if you say that the medicines are like the natural diseases, that they're similar, so you could think that they're similar in all their qualities. And then also you could think, well, if not everyone is susceptible to the disease, then if I give a right remedy to someone who has the disease, maybe they won't be susceptible to the remedy.
Mm-hmm.
The whole concept of susceptibility, and here Hahnemann seems to be saying that susceptibility is something that is relevant in natural diseases, but it's irrelevant in terms of medicines themselves, because everyone is susceptible to medicine. If I see an example or picture that comes to mind, it's like when someone is trying to make a speech.
Yeah. Oh, okay. You're going to give an example, but I wanted to mention here that it says if the dose be large enough. So I think that's an important point to keep in mind.
Yeah, that's the hammering away.
Okay.
When someone is trying to give a speech and someone taps on a wine glass or something to get a group of people to be quiet, and nobody listens, no one has susceptibility. Maybe a couple of people are quiet, but that's it. Are you doing sound effects?
Yes, I did. Did I do it again?
I heard it.
Okay.
And then sometimes you get one person stands up and just says one word. Doesn't tap a wine glass, nothing. He just says one word. Everyone, and all of a sudden everyone is quiet because everyone is susceptible to that person.
Ooh, I wonder who it could be, the king.
I mean, have you seen events like that where there's someone trying rather feebly to get attention and a few people listen, a few people don't, and then someone stands up, something in the presence of that person, everyone is susceptible to it and everyone falls silent.
I will keep that in mind and pay attention to when that happens the next time.
Yeah, it's interesting. Anyway, we only have 2 minutes left.
Okay.
So how would
we
like to...
Well, we covered aphorism 31 and 32.
Mm-hmm.
And tomorrow we will do 33, possibly 34. And I want to remind people to just go ahead onto the group on BTR, Who's Reading the Organon, on HWC. There is an area where we're posting as many of the sessions as possible, and you can comment there and continue the discussion or refresh your memory, or there's additional information posted there. I want to thank Vera once again for being my study buddy and partner in Blog Talk Radio. It's been an adventure so far, and it's going really well. Thank all the listeners, and say toodles for today. And I'm going to check out Jeopardy.
Okay, thanks, Debbie. Thanks,
okay,
everyone.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Until next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Who's Reading the Organon with homeopaths Vera Resnick and Debbie Brook on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio. Remember to take the Organon off the shelf and read it.